here is my one of my favorite Ricky stories, and there's a million of them. And Tony Gwynn used to tell this story about one of Ricky's tours with the Padres, and it's spring training, and Tony's sitting in the front of the bus, and Ricky had just gotten to camp. He had just met his teammates. He started walking toward the back of the bus at spring training. They were going to Tucson or whatever. And Tony turned around and said, "Rick, why are you walking to the back of the bus? You got tenure." And Ricky, on his way back, turned around and said, "Tenure? Shit, Tony, I got 16 years.
So this is a fun one for us because we get to do an off-season baseball roundtable with a couple of guys who've done basically everything you could do in this business.
And I've been looking forward to this. I was wanting to do this. I wanted to do this.
See, and what's interesting is CC Sabathia taking like creative initiative tells us two things. One, how far he's come as a host. And two, how much he loves Matt Vasgersian and Harold Reynolds. Because it's not every day that CC's like, "Yo, let's get these two guys. I love these guys. We need to talk to them."
Oh, we're flattered, yes, man. We're happy to be with you guys.
Yeah, so thank you guys for hanging out.
Yeah, if somebody signs, like our show re-airs till 1.
This is crazy how long
CC.
That's a good place to start, man.
I understand what's going on, but I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
What do you? It's crazy. Why do you guys think that is? That there's been that? I mean, this is so late, and there are so many big names that have not signed yet.
I'll tell you what, I'd be freaking out as a player. Like if it was me, if I was still signed, obviously I was a free agent, and I wanted to get my deal done before I had like a deadline in my head. But if I would have came back from my trip and not been signed. Like, I know guys are panicking. You have to panic. Like,
can't you? But as the player, can't you say, "Hey, sign it. Well, hey, agent, sign it. Let's do it."
The problem is, it's that the market. You know what you're worth.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I mean, say you're a $10 million player. You know good and well, $2 million is what they're offering me? You know, that's that's kind of what it gets to.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, because you have a going into the offseason, you have a number in your head or, you know, what you want to make a year.
Let's put this on. We can do this.
No, yeah, we
it's
are.
On. Yeah. Well, hello. Yeah. It's on.
Hey, we're rolling. Welcome to my world, by the way.
Yeah, I talk freely. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
No, you have a number. So, yeah. You know, I mean, and you kind of, you don't want to, you know, compromise that, you know, because sometimes this is your only chance to be a free agent.
Right.
You know,
right.
And this is, you know, you waited for so long to be able to get this opportunity, so you want to maximize it, and then when something like this happens, it's rough.
I mean, the biggest thing, you know, obviously people are going to say, "Oh, what's going on? What are the owners doing?" But the biggest thing to me is that all the general managers see everything the same. There's no different look of a GM. They all want to look at the same numbers. Mm-hmm. They're all studying the same spreadsheet, and they're looking for the same player. So how do you break through?
Yeah. So you're not going to have that one wild card who comes in and says, "Oh, yeah, I'm giving that guy 5 years and $120 million." Well, that's the thing, too. Every front office, right, maybe there's a homogenization that's gone on with, you know, analytics and that approach and whatever. And also, I think teams in general, just the more information you have, the smarter you get, the more aware you are, right? So if you're looking at the different teams in this league and you're like, "Okay, am I really going to beat the Yankees over the next 2 or 3 years? Am I going to beat the Astros over the next 2 or 3 years?" Or whatever, the Cubs or the Cardinals or whatever teams. And if you're one of those teams that's like the Twins and you're thinking, "Okay, maybe I could do – well, I don't know. There's a wide gap between us and the Indians. I'm not going to spend this money on, you know, Alex Cobb or whoever it might be." I'm not sure if that's the reason, but it feels like because everybody's gotten smarter – people are less likely to take chances. And now if you're a free agent, you're just waiting and hoping something will happen.
Well, I think another reason nobody wants to take a chance is because the fans are armed with the same information. And not to mention, let's look seriously at the guys making these decisions. GMs do not look like they did 15 years ago. I'm 50. These guys are 20 years younger than me. They're smarter than I am. They're all Ivy League educated. They have proprietary math skills that I'll never have. But they're all the same. All these dudes are the same, and they're all looking at the same stuff now. I kind of miss, and we talk about this all the time, I miss the old guy with salt in his hat that used to go to the ballpark with a stopwatch and a straw hat who would see what the spreadsheets don't tell you.
Yeah.
Like we miss that guy in the game a little bit.
And that's why we have a log jam. And we really do. And that's why I like what the Giants did this winter. I'll take Evan Longoria. I'll take Andrew McCutchen. You think they're old? Okay.
Yeah.
But I think also it's style of play. And CeCe's a current player. He's in it. I mean, you pitch to these guys. It's strikeout, walk, or home run.
Yeah.
And when one-third of the major league at-bats result in that, we got a problem. So to me, I'm sitting here going, give me a guy who hit the ball the other way. Mm. Give me somebody who'll steal a bag and manufacture a run, because I'll play playoff baseball for 162 games instead of when I get there in October and think, oh, okay, now I'll get a man over. So what's that going to do? I think the Giants will – the Giants are going to be competitive, man. People
Giants
think they're
real good.
They're going to be good.
Yeah, Giants had the ballsiest offseason of any team.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
They rolled the dice, man. They didn't care about the culture of not spending money on veteran guys. They want to win tomorrow, and they know how to do it.
And let me tell you something. Evan Longoria can hit because he's hitting like 600 off me. So I was so glad he was getting out of AL East, man.
Hey, he does have numbers against you.
He crushes me. So, like, when that went down, I was in Africa. That was the best move of the offseason. I was like, yes! Out of here, like.
What's that like? I know from a hitter who says, okay, I feel good today, I'm facing CC. Man. I own this guy. What about from a pitcher when you know a guy owns you?
I just might as well throw it underhand, man. Like, I got nothing. Like, no, you seriously, like, you have nothing for him. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can throw it in and out. Like, Tony Pena, he would come to me and be like, just throw him off fastballs today. Like, you know, like, maybe he'll pop this shit up. Like, I don't know.
But you know what's funny? Like, see, you've talked about it as a mental thing. Like, you're in there like, nah, I know he's going to throw. I know he knows I'm going to throw this. I know
I mean, like. At middle of the year last year, I faced him, and I was like, man, like, I'm just going to throw you cutters, and you just do whatever you want. Like, I mean.
And what did he want to do?
Hit homers. Homers and doubles, guys.
So you guys have probably gone to an all-star game together, right? Have you gotten to know him personally?
I know him personally. Yeah. Yeah. He's super nice to me, of course. Obviously. He's always super nice, of course.
Who is the guy right now who's out there in free agency who you're saying, like, no, this is a guy everybody's missing? He should be swallowed. I mean, I know there's a lot of talented dudes out there still, but who's somebody who you're like, if you're X team, like, you want that guy, like, you should go get him now.
My guy, and I don't know him. I've never met him. Everybody accuses me of, like, being in his agent's
fanboy
or something. I don't know him at all. Yeah. But Lance Lynn for me is that guy. Big dude, eat innings, compete. He's had the surgery. He's proven he can come back from it. I don't get it. You know, people are going to load up a truck with money for Arrieta and Darvish, and they're worth it. I get it. But if you want a good plan B, he should have been signed already. That's a guy I'd want on my staff.
The first guy that came to mind for me was Todd Frazier. You know, and I look at it from the Yankees' perspective. Great, you have Stanton, you have Judge, you have all these young players, you got all this. I think Todd, and I wasn't in the clubhouse, and I haven't talked to CeCe about this, but he's a guy that, like, made the Yankees, like, relax.
Yeah.
Made them, like, normalized them. It wasn't the look from afar, and I'm looking at 30,000 feet. This wasn't no, here's our routine, here's what we do. He came in, had everybody smiling, laughing, joking. You got to have that guy.
Right away, too.
So, yeah.
Like, right from the start.
So, I mean, if he's going to provide you your 25, 30 home runs. He's going to do that. He's done it for the last 5 years. He'll do it again. And I know he only hit 200, but he brings so much more. He's going to catch every ball that CeCe's going to have hit his way.
Yep.
You know, so I think he's the guy that the Yankees are missing. And so free agency for me, where the market's at, that's a guy I got to go bring back.
Alex Cobb for me. I just watched him over the last, you know, however many years playing against him. And I just, you know, like the way he goes about his business. I mean, you know, obviously he doesn't get as many accolades as, you know, Archer. But, I mean, he's just as good as anybody on that staff. And, you know, he's learned how to pitch. Obviously, all those guys that come through that system have a great changeup. And, you know, I think he'll be good going forward.
I agree on Cobb. I'm thinking about Lynn and Cobb. I'm like, if you're the Orioles and you have – I mean, I don't even know who their rotation is made of.
Neither do they.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, like, wouldn't you be like – wouldn't you take this opportunity to say, we can actually turn what was an incredible weakness into – maybe even somewhat of a strength with those guys available?
Yeah, this is why this is hard, and I think we're kind of talking about why the market's slow, because if you're a team and you're thinking, look, we could put all of our eggs in the Darvish basket, or we could figure out a way to spend those same eggs and get maybe two guys, maybe Cobb and Lynn, maybe Andrew Cashner and Cobb or something like that, then it doesn't happen overnight. That's why that for me is why it's slow too.
See, but I think we touched on it early though. Do you really think you're going to beat the Yankees if you're the Orioles?
No.
You know, so am I going to go turn around and spend $120 million and just throw it down the drain, so to speak? So I think you got to pick your windows. I look at the Brewers, the Christian Yelich move they made, that's $40 million, $44 million. And if they pick up the other option here, it's $58 million over 5 years. Then you get Lorenzo Cain for $80. You picked up $120 million on two all-star players in a division now where you're competitive, because the Cubs are starting to come back to the fold. The Cardinals are not running away like they were. And those are the two trains that you're chasing. So the Brewers are saying, we got a shot. Mm-hmm. I still think they need pitching, but they've got a shot. So they invested that $120 million. If I'm in the East and I'm the Baltimore Orioles and I say, yeah, Alex Cobb's out there. Yeah, Lance Lynn's out there. But Manny Machado's walking in a year.
Right.
So what am I doing?
Unless you're getting him on a deal where it's like in your mind you're saying, you know what, this is so manageable that they're either going to help me or I'm going to flip them to help somebody else at the deadline and then get some prospects back.
Yeah.
Which is definitely a possibility on the table for them if you got a Lynn or a Cobb on a 2-year deal or something small like that. I'm wondering though, if you're going through, if you're these guys, right? If you're Todd or you know, or you are Moustakas or any of the pitchers we mentioned, is this messing with your ability to get ready for the season?
Yeah, you don't know where you're going. For me, I mean, that's what I said. I mean, you want to know where your family's going to spring training. You want to, you know, you're just setting things up. So yeah. Like, not having a job, yeah, it fucks everything up.
Right. Like,
it does, yeah.
All of a sudden, you just – I'm thinking about it like, Matt, if we didn't know who we're working for, we're getting ready for the season, and, like, you think you're going to be doing games somewhere, but, like, what do? Are you doing demos in your office?
Yeah, because you can be doing games for – but you can be doing games for Oakland or New York or Tampa. Like, you – I mean, that's like a – and it's January – what is it? January 20th?
What is it, actually? Like, what is it, 29th?
Late,
28th?
Yeah. Whatever it is, it's late right now.
It is.
For guys not to be signed,
the family
man.
Dynamic changes everything.
Big time.
That changes it all. That changes your career when you have kids. I didn't have kids when I was playing, but – family changes it all, and I don't know how you do it, having kids in play. That's difficult.
It's easier for me just because when I was younger, I would take the game so serious and, like, you know, come home and I'd be mad about a pitch and things like that. So when I had kids and, you know, I come home and he don't care if I gave up 8 runs or threw a no-hitter, like, it's dad's home. Let's go play. And that was the biggest. That was the. It helped me so much.
You didn't tell him, get in that box over there. Let me throw this. Let me work on this wiffle ball curve. I should have thrown it.
It helped me so much just relaxing. You know what I mean? Away from the game, I think. And you know, now it's just two separate things. You know, when I'm home, I'm home. And we don't really talk about baseball, you know. And when I'm at the field, it's game on.
But are any of the kids ever like, yo, Dad, let's watch your start again tonight? Like,
no.
That never happened.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. I mean, Lil C's always watching, like, Manny Machado videos. And, like, he put all these videos on his phone. We had this long flight. And he had all these players. And I'm like, yo, I don't get a highlight video? Like, are you serious right now? He thinks I'm so trash in baseball. It's amazing, man. He asks me more questions about basketball than baseball.
Are you serious?
Yes. He thinks I'm like LeBron in basketball. He'll ask me anything, and he'll listen to what I'm saying.
He takes you as like a real news source for
baseball,
that.
No, nothing. No,
really?
No. Tell me he's a Warriors fan.
He is a Warriors fan. But he's a Cavs fan, too, because he was born in Cleveland. So
oh, right.
He likes LeBron.
Oh, you guys got the Cali connection.
Yeah. And he's a big Raiders guy.
Okay.
He's a big Raider. My whole family's Raiders.
What's raising him right.
Not that good in baseball.
That's funny.
Who's
his favorite baseball player?
Yeah. Manny Machado.
It is.
Yeah, okay. He loves Machado, man. He plays third base.
How does he feel about Longoria?
Nah. I don't know. I've never seen him watching Longoria videos. It's all Machado.
Wow.
It's all Machado.
So he's going to be like, Dad, you know, he's going to be a free agent this upcoming offseason. Got to bring him to the Yankees.
Oh, he would love that.
Yeah, I know he would. Now, Matt, we have to congratulate you on your new gig, man.
Oh, thanks.
The voice
of
Sunday Night Baseball.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
And I think, like, there's probably no better person to give you advice about what it is to be around Alex Rodriguez all the time than CeCe Sabathia. He'll tell you everything you need to know about manicuring the knowledge and intellect of Alex Rodriguez.
Well, I don't know how Alex is going to have time given the frequency of Instagram posts that he puts out there. Like,
no, you're going to be all over that thing. Oh, all in the story.
You better get ready
for that.
I'm going to be in the back, the guy holding his, like, covering up his face, the reluctant Instagram post.
But there's got to be some part of you that as soon as you knew this was happening, and, you know, I'm sure the germination took a while, but when you knew it was actually happening, there had to have been some early thought that was like, this means I'm going to hang out with Jennifer Lopez. Like, at some point, you're going to hang out with Jennifer Lopez because you're doing Sunday Night Baseball.
Can I, honestly, that is, I swear to you, that has never entered my mind. However, it has been discussed at home because my stepdaughters are convinced that she's going to be hanging out at the house now. So we got that to deal with.
Alex is big on team building. So at some point, there will be, I guarantee, there will be some kind of outing. Right? Maybe it doesn't take place at the Vescursion house, but there will be some kind of outing where it's like Alex is going to want to get to know everyone, I feel like.
That'd be fine with them. Yeah. And with me. I'd love it.
I told Matt, his number one thing you have to do is get on that private jet back to New York.
Yes, yeah, baby. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't they just have a mechanical on that plane? No, seriously.
He wasn't on it, though, so it's all good. Okay.
I saw that. I was like, oh, man.
Okay. That's there what you're going to need players. To do. You're going right. to need to hop on those. Yeah, okay. For sure.
All right. Don't you feel, I feel like Alex is going to right away be like, hey, Matt, just take the jet back. Don't like he's. I yeah. think he wants oh, yeah, to be yeah. around his teammates.
That's a Millar thing, man. I'm Southwest Airlines middle seat bag of peanuts guy.
That's seriously. It, huh?
I don't understand. Millar is flying private everywhere, man. What's going on? This
and
man?
He has America's guest for it.
What
once.
Is going on?
He is America's guest.
It's unbelievable.
If you have a private plane, he will get to know you.
That's good. But you've talked about this before, but like you mix it up, right? Like sometimes you go private, sometimes you go commercial.
Yeah, I like to go when we had a family. I like to fly private. And Carter don't understand why, if we're all together, why people are on the plane. If we flying regular, like, what's going on, bro? Like, what are these people doing on the plane?
Is that great, though?
Oh, man. It,
see, but you're a big guy. It, are any of the PJs, as the kids call them, are they ever, like, cramping, you know, your size? Because it's not like, if you're on a private jet, it's not like they're huge, even
no,
if they're nice.
They're small, yeah.
They're small.
Yeah.
You ever feel claustrophobic? I mean... This is coming from someone who doesn't fly private. So
no, I mean, no, I'm good.
You're good.
Yeah,
all
nah.
right, I got you. That's like, I feel like that's like the Family Feud answer for like, what's the best part of being rich? Like, oh, flying private. That's
a bad habit to have, I'm telling you.
Right, well, yeah.
That's why I was like, what is Millar doing, man?
You got to have some coin to fly private.
Seriously, man. That is. So, Harold, you, I've been told, you have a fantastic Ricky Henderson story about when you won the stolen base record in the American League. We got to ask you.
You got a ton of Ricky.
Have you heard
of
this?
No, I haven't.
Well, you know Ricky, right?
Yes.
You talk to Ricky. So anybody who talks to Ricky Henderson knows he talks in the third person. You'd be playing cards and go, Ricky got a good hand. Ricky ready to smoke you. You know, so that's what makes the story great. So I have to always tell that part of it. So 1987, in the 80s, Ricky wins the stolen base title every year. And then 87, he gets hurt. I end up winning it on the last day. I beat Willie Wilson. And Ricky got hurt in May. He had like 35 or 30 stolen bases. I finished the year with 60. Okay, so last day of the year, season ends. Willie Wilson and I go into the last day, tied at 59. I steal a bag. He doesn't. I win the title. I'm the champ! So I get home the next day. That was the last day of the season, 162nd game. Next day I get home, and phone rings. Answer the phone, Henderson here. I said, what up, Rick? You got to be calling to congratulate me. I'm like, Ricky Henderson's congratulating me. He says, 60 stolen bases? You ought to be ashamed. Ricky has 60 at the break. Click.
You
go. And I have a picture he signed in my office here that says, you know stolen base champ, Ricky Henderson.
That's great.
That is phenomenal.
Yo, last night, John Olerud told the story about the helmet. It's not true. I didn't
know.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't know it wasn't
true? No, I didn't know it wasn't true.
Yeah.
I thought this whole time that the story was true about him.
About when he got to first base and John, as the story went, he got to first base and John Olerud's playing defensively and Ricky purportedly said, why do you wear that helmet? And John said, well, I have a brain condition, have to wear this to protect myself. And John said to him, I used to play with a guy like that. And it was John.
Yeah, it was John. Right, right,
that
right.
was the story.
It's not true?
It's not true.
Oh. I was disappointed that it's not true. You know
I really
mean?
Want that to be true, man.
How about this one? Here is one of my favorite Ricky stories, and there's a million of them. And Tony Gwynn used to tell this story about one of Ricky's tours with the Padres, and it's spring training, and Tony's sitting in the front of the bus, and Ricky had just gotten to camp. He had just met his teammates. He started walking toward the back of the bus at spring training. They were going to Tucson or whatever. And Tony turned around and said, Rick, why are you walking to the back of the bus? You got tenure. And Ricky, on his way back, turned around and said, 10 year. Shit, Tony, I got 16 years.
That's great.
That is fantastic. This reminds me of a story. I forget the player, but it was a Los Angeles Rams player. They were getting the NFL was getting all these players to sign up for 401ks. It became like a league-wide initiative, and there was this one player on the Rams who was holding out. And let's call him, you know, John Davis. So John Davis is like not – he won't commit to the 401k. Like, it's a league-wide initiative. Everybody on the team's doing it. GM brings him in and is like, John, why won't you do this? It's so strange. Like, everybody's on board for the 401k. And he goes, man, I ain't doing no 401k. Practice is hard enough. You never know the characters you're going to have.
The malaprops are the big. Dude, when you were in Milwaukee, was Jim Gantner on the staff then?
No, he wasn't.
Was he ever around the club? Because he kind of came and went.
Yeah, not really.
He's one of the masters of the malaprop. He's a guy that said at one point that he couldn't make the trip to Toronto because he didn't have his gift certificate. He used to stand in the first base coaching box and give signs, some of which involved blinking, and he couldn't understand when a player would ask him for the signs again because he was wearing sunglasses and he's blinking signs down there. Like, guys like that in our game are beautiful.
You need those characters. Who's like a character like that today, in today's game?
Oh man, it's a million of them. I think I don't know. I have to think of like guys that I play with. That's a good question.
Like, who's just like a? That's a different
one. One of my favorite stories was Dustin Pedroia, and it's like his rookie year, second season in the league, and he has an at bat where he fouls off like 11 pitches in Minnesota. And I went back and found the video I had to verify.
Yeah.
And he was telling the truth. So he fouls off like the 11th pitch, and Joe Mauer's catching at the time. And Mauer says, hey, man, we don't know what to throw you. He turns around and says, neither does the rest of the league, Joe. It's over. And he gets a base hit on the next pitch, and he gets the first and tips his cap.
Oh, I love it, man. See, that's
– neither does the rest of the league, Joe.
Were we telling the story?
Like Brett Boone was always a good character. Against him was always, like, fun.
Because he referred to himself as the Boone.
The Boone. Yeah. And he always gave people shirts that, like, his friends, like, I know the Boone. Like, I had a t-shirt that said, I know the Boone.
And you probably rocked it, right?
Yeah. I wore it forever, yeah.
Do you think your teammates would rock a shirt with the R2-C2 logo on it?
Oh, yeah, they
would. We, you know, it has our faces on it, though.
We rock, like, all each other's shirts. So I have Gary Sanchez t-shirts.
The I Am Gary shirt?
Yeah, of course.
What do we think about the I Am Gary slogan? Like, because I love Gary Sanchez, you know that. But I was always like, this is a strange – like, he's really peddled this hard. But this
–
you love it?
Yeah, it's him.
I Am Gary.
It's him. I Am Gary.
It is funny. I mean, I'll tell you what. His social media
is good,
too.
And he rakes, so he can do whatever he wants.
And he looks cut up. We were messaging him about this the other day. Like, he just took some picture with his family the other day. But he looks jacked up.
Is he closet funny? Is he one of those guys that's got the funny but you don't really see
it as
a fan?
A lot of our clubhouse is hilarious. That people don't really get to see a lot that goes on in our clubhouse, but it's fun. It's real loose, man. It's way different than you would think it would be.
Tell you what, Instagram has changed the game.
Yes,
and one of my favorites is Yasiel Puig. Mm-hmm. Yes. Puig, my friend. I mean,
that's funny.
The stuff he puts out is great.
It's hilarious, and you end up developing more connectivity to players through whatever they post.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, there are some that are very sterile and promotional and whatever, but then you get some guys who they post funny stuff, man. Sanchez is like that. Like, even with the or Didi does it
Didi's
well too.
Great.
Didi has that kind of personality.
Thor,
yeah, exactly. Like, those kind of things, they end up being fun to follow. I'm jealous of you, Matt, for a lot of reasons, but like one in particular.
Man, the more time you'll spend around me, the less jealous you'll be of me.
One enormous. You worked with Joe Rogan at one point, right?
I did. Yeah.
This is like, I listen to his podcast religiously.
I did one UFC fight with Joe, and he wouldn't remember me from the guy that he just got a cafe from at the Starbucks. I mean, he wouldn't remember me. It was UFC 56. And the backup, the regular play-by-play guy couldn't do it, the backup guy couldn't do it, and the backup's backup guy couldn't do it. And I got a call like, hey, man, we need a warm body to sit next to Joe Rogan. And I'm like, well, that's all I can give you because I don't know anything about the UFC. And I showed up and did this fight, and my enduring image from this was I'm walking into the arena early. They had given me two tickets as a part of my daily employment package. And I'm like, what am I going to do with these tickets? And I'm walking in and I see what I think is a father's son walking in front of me. And it's a little guy and a tall guy. And the little guy's wearing a Sean Burroughs Padres jersey.
Oh, wow.
And I'm working in San Diego at the time. I'm like, oh, there's some Padres fans. Sean Burroughs jersey. That's cool. I'll give this guy my tickets. I tap the kid on the shoulder. He turns around and he's got this distant look in his eyes. And I go, hey, man, you're from San Diego. I got some tickets here. No sooner do I say that than a gaggle of dudes circle me and start coming up on me. What you want with my boy, man? What you want with my boy? Whoa, 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 whoa. And the more they speak, the more I start smelling an accent. And I say, are you guys Armenian? And like, yeah, man, we're Glendale 56s or whatever, like some Armenian gang in Glendale, California. I'm like, well, I'm Armenian. And I said the one like phrase that I know in Armenian. They're like, oh, man, cool, really hot. And I was like their boy from that one. I'm like, here, take the tickets and let me get away from you. And this one kid with the Sean Burroughs jersey had the F word tattooed down his neck. And I'm like, whoa, you guys are hardcore. I'm out.
That's how you know, man.
UFC wow. crowd is, they're into it. It's a whole culture.
How do you even, like, how do you prepare for a...
You can't prepare for that, right?
You cannot, because they will smell you as a rat. If you try to act like you know what you're talking about, they'll kill you.
So, like, hey, I'm just here.
Yeah, and I just asked Joe a bunch of questions. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if you've ever sat ringside at a boxing match or a UFC fight. The pure violence of that, like, when you see somebody's eyes roll up into his head and him go flat on his back, you're like, damn.
It's intense. That shit is crazy.
I didn't have the stomach for it.
I know. You had this offseason.
Yeah,
you went to
just
one,
the energy in the building I like. I mean, it's a lot of fun. You know what I mean?
They're into it.
Good. I don't know. If you can't call them, like, that's tough, man.
No, I was like, is he okay? I mean, that's what I wanted to say.
Right. That would be good. You just become, like, the concerned parent on the air instead of the play-by-play guy.
These guys are crazy, man.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, that's nuts.
It's a different level than boxing, too. Like, when you see people get kicked in the head, you're like, wait, no, that's not right. Like, that's messed up.
No, it's a real fight.
They're stud athletes, though. I know. Those guys are... Oh. Man, it's a different level of training and dedication.
There's something, too, about – now, I've never gone to a UFC event, but I've gone to quite a few fights and a couple Mayweather fights, and there is something cool just about the spectacle. You know, it just feels like a big event. Now, his fights are usually – they're technical and whatever, but, like, you get some of those replays that play in the undercard, and the whole crowd's just like, oh!
Well, when he fought Ricky Hatton – that was I mean, he knocked him out, but so that was a real fight.
No, what about the gear you got to wear? What, you got to go swag on that stuff, man.
Yes,
how long do you think about?
Hatton, we wore suits.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. We wanted everybody was going dressed up. So I mean, just depends on who the fighter is.
Really? So how you get the understanding of what you got to wear?
Just depends on who it is. Like, if it's Mayweather, you know, you got to go kind of like a little dressed up. You know, Andre Ward fight, you can go, you know, bayish. You know what I mean? Like,
bayish. Can you just, for those of us who don't know what bayish is, can you explain it to
just
us?
Just me. Take a picture and we'll post it, and this is bayish.
Okay, gotcha. That's going to be our caption, okay? That's gonna, to bring it back to social media. But this is like, CeCe will do anything media wise as long as he can dress. Bayish.
Please, yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, like, I had tuxes on this weekend.
I saw it. Let me tell you something.
I felt good.
That tux you wore to the baseball writer's dinner on Sunday night, fantastic.
Thanks, bro.
Did you guys see what CeCe wore?
No.
See if we can I saw
Stanton and Judge, though. Those boys were cleaned
good,
up.
Yeah.
Cleaned up, right?
Do you have a guy or you have a series of people helping you with your stuff?
No, I have a guy. My wife. We have, like, a guy that comes and, like, brings everything, and then my wife has to put it together.
See.
Here's a picture. Now, he was wearing an emerald green tux.
That is nice.
Yeah, man. I mean, you looked, and what was it, like, velvet, too?
Like velvet, you know what I mean?
That's cool.
Ooh, man.
That's green for money.
Yeah, that is, man.
So my wife dresses me.
Okay. That's smart.
Bring it back around. Yeah, exactly. Let's keep the ball rolling, shall we? Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm. Except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping at America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this, they are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you.
They even offer you a 120-night sleep trial to ensure perfection and a 120-night low-price guarantee so you know you paid for the perfect price. Talk about 1-2 punch, a knockout if you will.
Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. You guys, you do Hot Stove on MLB Network, 9 a.m. every weekday in the offseason. And then, obviously, you both are incredibly intimately involved, whether it's MLB Tonight with you, Harold, or everything you've done hosting with MLB Central, now Sunday Night Baseball, Matt. When you look at this season, who are the favorites to you to win it all this coming season?
What do you got, H?
Well, CeCe's sitting favorite. Next to me.
Even if he wasn't, it's hard not to like what they're doing.
Yeah, no, you got to like what the Yankees are doing. The Astros,
yeah,
what they've built. It's going to be hard to knock
getting cold
off.
Too. It's going to be tough.
They're going to be tough.
I think
Garrett Cole makes it. Whew.
And Verlander's 10 years younger now.
Yeah, what happened, man? What he was filthy last year.
Man. Yeah, this is like the old guy.
I guess that core muscle stuff, as a non-athlete, I guess I understand more about how that can impact you than I did before. Mm-hmm. Because he was saying it the whole time. Look, I wasn't right. I had surgery on my stomach. I couldn't do anything. And now that he's healthy, we see him. And I think Brent Strom, their pitching coach, is real good, man. He brought him to another place, too. But I like St. Louis. If they can fix the back of the bullpen, and I know that's like saying, hey, that would be delicious if it tasted better. but if they can do that, I like what the Cardinals are doing. And if they get Hosmer, man, then it's a big time.
It's even like now with the teams that are good, the bullpens are the best part of the team, it seems like, right now.
Yeah, that's what they've done
in the last couple of years. I mean, even more so than the starters, because in the playoffs, I mean I only got 75 pitches in it. I'm coming out. I mean the bullpens play a huge role in throughout the season, even more so in the playoffs.
No doubt. Well, that's how it's built. And if you look at this offseason, the only guys getting contracts our bullpen guys.
Yeah, it's true.
It's like when the NFL said, okay, we're going to pay the linemen. You know, they're protecting our $100 million quarterback. Let's invest in the line.
Right.
And this is kind of what's happening, I think, in baseball with the bullpens.
Even guys are getting drafted as bullpen guys. Like back when I got drafted, you had to be a failed starter to go to the bullpen. Now the guys are getting drafted as bullpen guys, you know?
How's that make you feel, though? Where the game's at as far as a starter? And
if I was younger, I would have a big problem with it. As far as, because I wanted to always finish what I started, go deep in the game as possible. But now as I'm older, let me go six innings.
Good with that.
Has there ever been a dialogue with you closing, CC? Has that ever been talked about?
No.
Heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, that's it. It will happen. I'm trying to think. Have you come out of the bullpen ever?
I've only
ever?
Come out of the bullpen one time.
Milwaukee?
In the playoffs. No. It was in the playoffs when I was with the Yankees against Detroit. I think it was 2012.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not a bullpen guy. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah. Like, I got to the mound running from jogging. I was like, this is – I'm fucking tired. Like, how do you do this?
CeCe wants the car. He wants that little cart to think about.
Throw 8 pitches? Right. Like, no, I don't need the 8 pitches. I just ran out here. Like, let's go.
So, okay, that would be one way to speed up the game right there is take away the warm-up pitches out of the bullpen.
I don't need the 8 pitches after I run. Like, no.
Hey, that takes us to a question I want to ask CeCe. We've been talking about pace of game so much.
Yeah.
And I contend – the ball's not in play. You know, everybody wants to strike everybody out. So it's going to take 10, 12 pitches to strike somebody out. As opposed to, give me a ground ball, double play, took one pitch, I'm out. That takes time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm curious your thoughts on pace of play.
I don't know what could be done. I mean, obviously, like you said, the strikeouts are huge in the game. Not for me. I want to get, first pitch, ground ball, and get out of there. But when I was younger, I couldn't have told myself that. You know, I wanted to strike everybody out. So I understand that. I don't know if the pitch clock can work or, cutting down the mound visits in between. I mean, I don't really know what'll work. I don't even know if anything needs to change. I don't know. I mean.
So you think a pitch clock, will that affect you at all?
It wouldn't affect me, but I know it would affect some guys.
Okay.
You know, and We're just not conditioned to have a clock on us. Like,
right.
you played your whole life this game with no clock, and then now all of a sudden you want to put us on 20 seconds? Like, I don't think guys will receive it too well. It wouldn't affect me, but I think it'll affect other people.
What about catcher visits? Because Gary's out there a lot with not you so much, but a lot of guys.
Yeah, he wants to get it right, you know, to his defense, but it's a lot. It is a lot, you know. And in the playoffs, it was a lot. He was going out a lot and back and forth. I know,
Did you want to just go, man, I got this. Get on back there.
Nah, because you want him to be encouraged to be calling the right things. He's trying to do the right thing, you know. So you got to let him do his thing. But I don't know if – I mean, I'm sure if they put a limit on the visits, then he'll figure it out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You just have to see how it plays out.
Right, that one, I think – who knows what kind of substantial difference it makes, if at all. But, like, that one's an easy one, right? Okay, like, there's only but this many mound visits you can get. Catcher and, you know.
But they were saying like, guys coming from, like, the infield. Like, if Didi wanted to come up and grab the rosin, is that a mound visit? Yeah, you know what I mean? Like,
that's the challenge.
They're going to have to define that. Yeah.
The catcher thing, I think, is important because – if you get a sign mixed up,
I know. Then someone gets killed.
Now you're talking about umpire getting drilled.
Right? Yeah. No, you're right. It's
or even
true.
The catcher. You know what I mean?
Somebody
gets
so right. What? Yeah. Right. What if if you've used up your visits and the catcher's
and the way that guys are stealing signs at the rate they are now, like it's not like how it was. It's crazy.
So that's
so you have to protect against that too.
So what happened with the Apple Watch? When did you hear about it?
Yeah. Oh, when it was in the news. Because I'm a pitcher, so they don't really tell us none of that stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not in on that. Like.
But why do you think it's worse now than ever? Because I've heard this.
With the stealing signs?
Yeah, because I know.
I don't know. Yeah, technology. Yeah.
I mean, they got cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
And if you have any sense at all, you can decode a sequence.
Yeah.
So what I would do today if I were playing is I would sit here and I'm facing CC Sabathia. Instead of looking at every pitch and I'm going to steal bases off him, I'm watching all the sequences. And I don't care if you're first sign after two, we're going to fifth sign.
You're
going to
catch it.
I'm going to figure it out after a period of time. So
how long does it take you to figure it out in that case?
I used to do it in a game.
Yeah?
You know, so now with technology, I would have it in a blink of an eye.
But you got to think there was only maybe one guy on each team. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like guys weren't able to do that as easy as, you know, back in the day. So now anybody can do it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, literally anybody can – if I wanted to, I can probably go down there and catch guy signs.
Yeah. And the secret behind it is the trust. Because once somebody gives you a bad sign,
it's a wrap.
Don't give me nothing anymore.
Yeah.
So now if I can validate what I'm seeing and be able to go, all right, 100%, here's what we're going to do. CC Sabathia, every time he uses a third sign after three. You know, every time. How do you know? I watched his sequence. Here's his last 10 outings. That's gold. I got that.
It's how do you guard against that?
You have to – Gary comes out and changes the signs.
It's like, how often are you on the mound and you think, like, this guy at second has me and we need to do something about
it? I'll just step off and, like
– point at him?
Tell him. I'm a
or you point at that, Gary I'm or point different. At the – you like, point at the runner.
Yeah.
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 Have you ever had any friendly exchanges when you've done that?
I don't know, maybe.
how many times a year does that happen where you're actually
I think a guy has it.
Yeah, and you call him and you're like, hey, man. Like,
it happened maybe twice last year.
Okay, so pretty rare.
Yeah, pretty rare. It doesn't happen that much where I know, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I know what's happening. You know what I mean? You know.
You know, the one that gets me is I think back to this one a lot. About 5 years ago when the Chris Sale, Victor Martinez, Babylon that used to happen with them.
Yeah.
And Victor Martinez was allegedly – he had a guy in the stands – and Sale allegedly knew where his guy was, and he pointed at him and then made the binoculars thing with his eyes. And then Chris Sale gave the best interview afterwards, totally stone-faced. I have no idea what you're talking about. And it left us all like, oh, man, I want the real story.
But wasn't it supposedly like in Cleveland they had like lights back in the day or something?
Flashing light.
Yeah. They
always say that about Toronto, right? Like the hotel room light is on or off or whatever.
But see, I don't know. Never seen a hitter like this.
Yeah, right. Looking up.
Looking up in the stands.
Like, I would definitely be able to see that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, see, my thing has always been, as someone who's not on the field and just observing, I've always thought, if there's a guy on second base and a runner not using technology and he steals my signs and he wants to give it, that's fair game. Like, I have no problem. Now, if I'm the pitcher, maybe I'm going to say something, whatever, that's fine. But – To me, that's totally within bounds. Change up your signs then if I can just get them from second.
I agree.
But when you start using technology, that to me feels like cheating.
I agree.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like it's a gray area.
Is it cheating or is it like just getting an advantage? You know what I mean?
Well, in game, no. It doesn't feel like cheating to me if you're watching video leading up to a game. But if you're in the
No, I'm with you.
It's all the same.
I think when you add the technology, it gives you a different advantage. It's not like you intellectually figured it
out. Right, exactly.
Yeah. And so when back in the day when it had to be, you had to have a smart guy on the team to figure this out.
Yeah.
Now literally anybody can do it. Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that would, I feel like that to me, it would feel a little bit different. Yeah.
Fine line between.
Yeah. Come on. He's giving signs.
Right. Yeah.
I know this guy didn't get it. Exactly. But you know what I love? So, CeCe, you won the Good Guy Award, which congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations.
Baseball writers
did it. That's cool.
You're a good guy, man.
You're a good guy, and everyone likes you, except for, like, competitor CeCe, when he gets mad, like, you do not want to be on the other side of that. Like, you don't want to be that guy at second base who CeCe just caught, because, like, that's not going to be pleasant for you. But you kind of need that within yourself.
And that's,
you
why, that's why, going back to what we're talking about on the show, that's why I have to be so relaxed before the game.
Right.
Because I can't, like, I mean, I would go crazy. I would want to run the ball to the plate if I'm not, like, you know, myself before the game, just because I don't know what's going to happen to me emotionally while I'm out there.
Is that changing, or more guys like that? Because, I mean, I think as recently as 10, 15 years ago, four out of every five starters on a staff were, like, headphones locked on, don't talk to me,
right.
Neanderthal
exactly.
guy. No. I don't see that as much now.
No, guys are like, more guys are like chill. Severino's real relaxed. Massa's relaxed. Sonny, he's chill. Monty, he's always the same. Like, he's just Monty. So
that's cool. I like that.
Most
and
of our staff.
What do you mean by
like
he's just
that.
Monty?
Monty's just Monty, bro.
Hey, so do you guys hit people anymore?
No.
I mean, like, in the day when I knew a guy was giving signs, and I'm playing second base, I walk over and go, man, they're going to drill you.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like, I'm not giving signs. No. And that would end it.
Not so much anymore, just because of, you know, guys go to social media, guys talk. I mean, it's just, you know, it's not that really that secret society anymore like it used to be where you could, you know, we could police the game ourselves.
Yeah.
Kind of gets away from us. You know what I mean?
I do think that, you know, you're talking about that Sale-Martinez exchange, and it just kind of stirs something I've always felt about baseball. And I thought about it last year when you guys had your fight with the Tigers, too. Like, I think the sport itself would be well-served to accelerate the attention around those conflicts and the personality-driven aspects. Like, if you think about how long that season is, right? I mean, and we all know, you're not going to get caught up in every single result. You're just not. You need the storylines to be able to carry. You work for a network that has to put content on the air for 365 days only about baseball, right? Like, so you know, you need those storylines.
Right.
I feel like that's one thing the NBA has done so well, right? Like, they kind of play up their drama
a little bit.
They play that up big time.
They
do. I feel like in baseball, there's started to be a little wave of, like, embracing at least histrionics to a certain degree, more so than there used to be. I would love to see kind of playing up the drama instead of being like, hey, don't say that. Like, no, go for it. Like, talk some stuff.
I like it's so much harder to do in baseball.
Yeah, I was about
to say.
In
the NBA, you can do, if the Warriors and Celtics are playing, you can do a whole campaign of Kyrie versus Curry, and it's cool, and they're both playing the same position, and it plays because there's only 10 guys on the floor and no one's wearing a hat to obscure their face. In our game, it's hard to make the individual rivalries sizzle like that, player versus player.
But do you think that there's a – and you
the
guys –
the smack talking's different because the ball hurts.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That was a big part of it.
Yeah.
It's a baseball in play, right?
It is cool.
So you're not going to say something that you know when, like – you facing Verlander or you facing Severino, you're not going to give your opinion to you. Like, I'm not going to tell you what I think about Severino before I face him. He throws 100 miles an hour.
And
like,
you notice the Chris Sale stuff stopped. Victor didn't say nothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Chris Sale did. He got the ball thrown.
He's got
100
the ball.
Miles an hour.
Right, exactly. Right. So you could say whatever you want, but ex-player, he's not going to want to do it because he doesn't want to get a 91 mile an hour cutter in his
face.
Depends
how bad you are on the mound. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
That's it. I know, but sometimes, like, I'm thinking about, you're right. I mean, these are all obviously great, you know, arguments, squashing arguments from you guys. But I'm thinking about that Tigers-Yankees fight last year, how fun that was, right? And there's something, there's something to – I feel like there's some sort of untapped territory with just drumming up. Maybe if it's in post-game commentary, if it's not a pitcher-batter thing. What if it's a batter-batter
Brawls rate, man.
They do. They do.
But even with batter-batter, I mean, guys only get up four times. Like, you know, with basketball, you got – you know, you guys got the ball constantly.
Yeah.
So Judge is only going to hit four times. You know what I'm saying? So it's hard to kind of
play
that
up. I also think, you know, the league gets caught up for the right reasons, the same way the NHL used to get caught up with, like, fights in a hockey game are what we all want to see.
Right.
And the NHL kind of passively endorsed them for years. And I don't think Major League Baseball, there's an ethical issue there with, like, you know, okay, that pile was pretty funny when both benches cleared, but somebody at the bottom got hurt.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So
true.
They can't make it that big a deal.
And maybe there's other ways besides the fighting where that comes into play, just turning your players into characters to a certain degree, and not just athletes.
They would benefit
plus
from that.
Plus, the one matchup that bothers me in baseball is like, okay, today it's going to be Longoria for Tampa against Didi DeGoris. Well, you know, the difference in baseball is you can take the ball out of his hand. In basketball, you knew Michael Jordan's getting the ball. You knew LeBron's going to get the basketball. Curry's getting it at the end of the game. In baseball, I go, ball four.
Yeah, you're walking.
That beat me.
Right.
So now where's the drama that built up?
The only thing you can sell in advance is pitcher versus pitcher.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it.
That's what I always say about, like, courtside seats versus, like, front row of a baseball game. It's like you sit courtside for Cleveland, you know, oh, I'm going to see LeBron score 20 points tonight. Like, if you try and sit, like, front row behind home plate and you're going for a batter, like, you can go see Alex Rodriguez in his prime. You might go 0-for-4 with three strikeouts. That's the way this game's built. You want to go for the pitcher, it's a little bit more like, okay, I'm going to get to see this pitching matchup. They're on the mound constantly. You're going to be invested throughout. But I agree, that's the one thing that buills like a you know, mano-a-mano matchup.
That's why, as we were talking about today, that's why UCC versus Kluber in Game 5 of the Division Series last year was just such a cool thing, man. That was not lost on me or other fans.
It wasn't on me either. Like, it was cool for me, too. Like,
it's so cool.
I was able to, like, enjoy all of it. You know what I'm saying? It was weird, like... It was going back, it was fun, and I felt comfortable, and I was able to, like, enjoy it.
Yeah, that's
awesome.
I don't
think I would have been able to do it anywhere else.
Right. See, I think the one thing that baseball has to do, and particularly the Yankees, I thought about this, is I want to see batting practice. Mm. As a fan, we got to open the gates. Yeah. That's when I know Judge is going to hit a ball, and I know that Stanton's going to get to hit a baseball. So, to me... It's like, why is the gates closed at 4 when the Yankees are taking BP?
Yeah.
I want it open, so I got a chance to have that experience of, wow, I watched Stanton take batting practice. I don't care what he does in the game.
Or maybe the home team take it second?
Second. And that's what the Yankees did. The Yankees took batting practice second.
Right.
You know what kind of buzz that would be in that stadium leading up to the game?
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, it would be off.
Is that optional for the teams, or is that league mandated?
I don't know.
I think it's league
mandated.
That
call's been put in. We'll see.
Yeah, because – yeah.
but I think that it's way cooler if the home team hits second, even if you move it up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because guys want that, you know, at home you want that hour before the game to kind of do what you need to do.
That's why I used to love those 4 o'clock starts as a kid going to Yankee Stadium, because normally they take BP a little bit later. And so you get in and I catch – if I got in at 2, I would actually catch the Yankees taking – BP rather than just, you know, getting to see Lee Stevens take BP, whoever it might have been.
No offense, Lee.
Yeah, no, Lee hit some bombs.
Lee Stevens,
yo, Lee hit some bombs. he hit bombs enough that he's the first name that I think of when I think of opposing BP. But, like, I totally agree, because that is – it's to bring it back to hoops for a second, it's like what we see with Curry's warm-up routine, right? Where, like, everybody's hawked around the floor watching him with his you know, his warm-up routine. You get that. I mean, who doesn't want to see Aaron Judge? Look, you're there all the time.
I don't watch BP,
I'm there
bro.
All the time. Oh, you don't? Okay. You're a bad example.
Yeah,
But, like,
but as a fan, those are the things that you remember. Yeah. I remember as a kid watching Pistol Pete Maravich shoot.
Yeah.
Warm up. Shoot around. You know, you keep you're glued to this guy.
Exactly.
And that's something I will always remember, whether it was the UCLA teams that won under Wood and all the teams I got a chance to see. I'll never forget watching Pistol Pete dribbling between his legs.
Just as long
shooting.
As they don't get any ideas on Park Ave for an extra ticket or charging for that. Right, you know, let's keep that a part of the experience.
For me, it was always like watching the guys take infield. Like, my dad would take
Same
me to the
here.
Park. We would go to Candlestick, and I would love to watch him take infield.
Yeah.
And, like, for me, I was walking. Back. I think I was I mean, I had to be 9 or 10 years old, and Barry Larkin was taking. They were taking infield. He made an error. I was like, "That's all right. You still win the Gold Glove." And he looked up and threw me a ball.
Really?
Like, he won't remember that, but I remember that. I was 9 years old, 10 years old.
That's an amazing cool. story.
It was great. Cool. So, like, you know, you want to be in the park for that. You remember that type of stuff.
Have you ever seen Barry to tell him?
I've
that?
Never told him that story.
Oh,
no.
That's cool. You gotta tell him that. That's cool.
Real cool.
But you know, that is something that I think definitely has to be addressed, and maybe the Yankees. You know,
they can start it.
They're going to be
because they're going to team. I would want
right.
to see take BP,
and I think fans are going to want to too for sure. Last year they started to do it. They had those block party games. I don't know how aware you were of them doing it, CC, but where they did open it early so that people could see BP
on Friday nights.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think it was well received. Also on Yes, we have the batting practice show, which you know usually was like a mix
that.
Of showing BP or whatever. But now I think it's going to be. I don't know this, but. I'm guessing we're going to show more and more just of these guys hitting and just actually watching BP because who doesn't want to see Stanton or Judge just hit
or Sanchez. Bombs?
Or
Mash.
Sanchez.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Look at the good suggestions that we've stumbled into.
I know.
What other of the world's problems can we solve on this podcast?
No doubt. Seriously, this is the new competition committee that we need. We should all have a seat. No one thing else. CC likes to ask broadcasting questions. And so I want to ask you this, both of you guys this, because you both have done big-time national television play-by-play, right, and color. And I always feel like in baseball, it's harder than any other sport, I would imagine. I haven't done national baseball. But to do a national telecast, because it's such a strong local sport, there's, you know, 162 games where these people know everything about those players.
Right, right.
And – if you're doing, like, I do a lot of national basketball, right? When I do those games, I know that still the vast majority, a huge portion of our audience is not fans of the two teams that are playing in that game.
Right.
Because basketball is a little more of a national sport, right? Like, in football, we know that. Like, but in baseball, you have a huge percentage of your audience who is fans of those two teams, and they know all these things. Mm-hmm. But you still have to serve the portion of the audience that isn't a local fan. So how do you kind of reconcile
you're
that?
You're spot
to a national?
On. It's hard because, you know, if, say, for example, you come in with the national rights holder and you're doing a Yankee game on a Saturday or on a Sunday, and that audience has been watching Yes for the last 15 years, and they want to hear Michael and Coney or whoever's in there with Michael, they want to hear Michael. And you're coming in and you're ruining their experience by not being their local guy. Because, look, it's a regional game, and fans get real proprietary about their voices, and they like their guy in their living room 162 games a year. You come in as a quote-unquote national guy, and the assumption is that you don't know as much about our guy does because he's with the team all the time. Mm-hmm. So it is tough. It's a hard one. I mean, that's why you got to kind of bone up extra hard and make sure you know what you're talking about. And all the minutiae around each team, you've got to be familiar with. You can't be guessing on a pronunciation out of the bullpen. Look, I've boxed those before.
Of course.
It's a lonely feeling. And that's why I'm not on Twitter.
Hey, look, that's a good call, man. Because I have a rule. I don't look at my mentions at all, like, anywhere
when you're
around
doing a game?
Never.
No?
Because you know what? If somebody just says, like, oh, you suck, like, that doesn't bother me.
And you know the worst one is, and you know, just for example, I'll use his name here because he gets it all the time. The assumption is, like, Joe Buck doesn't like whatever, fill in the blank on the team.
Right, exactly.
Because if it's a Cowboys-Vikings game, then, oh, Joe Buck doesn't like the Vikings. Oh, he's doing a Phillies-Reds game. Oh, Joe Buck doesn't like the Reds. I got news for you. Joe Buck doesn't care
right,
who
exactly.
wins this game.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't. And he doesn't have anything against your team.
Right.
But the hardest thing in play-by-play is when you're doing a game, a big game, and the road team is winning and there's nothing going on. Game 5 of the division series was tough from a broadcast standpoint because the Yankees are scoring runs. You want to be big. You want the call to be big. And there's no ancillary noise supporting your call.
Yep.
You feel like you're in a phone booth someplace.
So then now all of a sudden you're rooting for the Yankees.
Yep. Yes.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
You become
that's,
that homer.
That's what people say.
That's what they hear. Yep.
And the other thing, like, say, for example, you're doing that game and Matt talked about your local markets are watching, right? So Francisco Lindor is playing. This guy's a 30-homer shortstop. He's having an amazing year. And everybody on the other side is going, Didi's better than him.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Now you're an apologist.
Like, I'm just
Lindor's a great player.
100%. And the other thing I think of is, like, how what do you bring with like the unique access, right? That is something new to the local fan as well as colors things for the national fan.
I think from my perspective, doing a national show nightly,
yeah,
I see all the teams.
Mm-hmm.
So I love to bring that team perspective of the league or how great somebody is or whatever. Now, obviously, playoffs, World Series, you zero in a lot more on those two teams.
Mm-hmm.
But in the middle of the summer in July and you're doing a national game and all of a sudden the score comes up and it says Red Sox 8, Royals 1. And you go, wow, the Sox just won their eighth in a row.
Oh, you hate the Royals.
Mookie Betts is on a roll. This guy's having an MVP season. Well, I'm calling the Tigers and the Yankees right now. Those people really don't want to hear about it. Mm. But you want to give people a national perspective,
yeah, broad perspective.
On what's going on. I traveled with Joe.
Yeah.
I did 2 seasons with Joe Buck. And he's the most hated broadcaster in the country.
It's crazy.
And I think he's phenomenal.
He's unbelievable.
We'll be in San Francisco. And we'll have the window open. We're doing a World Series, San Francisco. And we had to shut the window.
So aggravating, man.
That's just the passion of the Bay Area people, man. Yeah.
But I'll say this. You know who's received worse there than Joe is Pierzynski.
Oh, my goodness.
God.
Really?
Oh.
But you know, it's like it's incredible because we all, any of us who have ears, no, Joe Buck is sensational at what he does.
He's the best.
He's an all-time great. He can retire now at whatever age, and he'll go into multiple Hall of Fames.
Yeah.
That's how sensational he is. But it blows my mind how matter-of-fact fans talk about broadcasters like, oh, how could you like them? He hates the Yankees. I'm like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, not like I think or he sometimes shades things this way or whatever, which would still be wrong. But definitively, like, how could you listen to Matt Vasgersian? Don't you know he hates the Yankees? Like, what? No, he does not care at all.
There's 3 things that all fans think they can do better. They think they can be better umpires, better GMs, and better broadcasters. They're right with the broadcasting. There's no way they can be better umpires than GMs. Everybody thinks they can do that. It's hard.
Even I think I could be a better umpire.
On that note, guys, thank you for doing this, for hanging out.
Thanks, guys.
That's congrats
awesome.
On all your thank gigs you. And success, and thank you appreciate for hanging out so long.
We'll be
hop
listening.
On the PJ, man.
Okay.
That's it. You and A-Rod and J-Lo on the private jet. That's going to be your
here
year,
we
man.
Come, Instagram.
ThePlayersTribune.com